Hello and welcome to Are You Well? You might often have heard people saying that they've been diagnosed with candida. I mean, often when somebody truly has candidiasis or candida as a condition, they are really talking about a type of fungal infection. And this can be quite common amongst women of a certain age when there is thrush, like vaginal thrush, which can result in candidiasis. It can be common, not just amongst women who are in their reproductive age. It can be common amongst children. It can be there in men and women of all ages. But the most important aspect of candida that we often forget to address is when there is a chance of fungal overgrowth in our digestive system. From an Ayurvedic perspective, as we can all understand, a system which was developed 5,000 years ago or was in at its pinnacle 5,000 years ago, they had no possibility of looking at something which would be like a microbe or like a fungus or a yeast or a mold or a bacteria or a virus. But this is not to say that they didn't have any concept of these microbes or something similar to these external agents which can come and affect our health. I mean, in fact, to the modern Western world, it would be surprising if I say that in a textbook which is written in 2nd century BC to 1st century AD, that's the date that we know, called Charaka Samhita, which is one of the ancient Sanskrit textbooks, which is one of the ancient medical textbooks of Ayurveda. Charaka talks about krimi. Krimi is something like a worm, or it can be something similar to a microbe. And Charaka in this chapter explains that there are different types of krimis. And these, some are visible and some are so minute that they may not be visible. And they can affect the blood, the feces, they can affect the skin. So Charaka Samhita has explanations on how these external agents can take shelter in our body and result in ill health. I'm not entirely sure whether Charaka's understanding or concept of these krimi or external agents is comparable with our understanding of microbes such as or parasites like fungus, yeast, mold or bacteria or virus. But these concepts do intrigue me, because even in Charaka Samhita, which is so old as 2nd century BC, we are looking at how it can affect one's digestive health. And in fact, today there has been such a resurgence of digestive issues. I see this in my practice all the time, that so many of the patient population are sensitive to certain foods, food intolerances, late onset food allergies, and of course, true food allergies as well, resulting in hyperacidity, you know, like gastric reflux, bloating, or irritable bowel syndrome, which could be either constipation dominant or diarrhea dominant. And what I'd like to kind of look at then is there something that is inherently affecting their digestive system? From an Ayurvedic perspective, when the gut health or the digestive system is not functioning well, what is seen is a depletion or an affliction in a particular concept called Agni, which is one's digestive capacity. Agni relates to fire, or these transformative factors within the digestive system, like the enzymes, the secretions, which are responsible for digestion and assimilation. When they are affected, then that would result in an impairment in someone's Agni. And when someone's Agni or digestive capacity is out of balance, then it results in what in Ayurveda is called production of ama, or an endotoxin. So these are necessarily the toxins that are fatal, but these are toxin-like substances or toxin-like biochemicals or inflammatory factors which can further disturb the gut. And when they stay in the digestive system for a long period of time, that causes inflammation, then it affects not only digestive functions, but it can also affect many other functions and can be the root cause for the onset of many chronic illnesses. So when you think of this, one of the key things that I today in my practice notice is somebody who comes to me with digestive issues or other chronic conditions where they're not losing weight despite eating okay and exercising, or they have repeated infections or repeated skin eruptions, hives, rashes, or certain hormonal changes which are not managed even though they have been given the right kind of medications to support with their hypothyroidism, etc. When I see these things, I would like to then understand, is there something that's wrong with their gut health? One of the main things that I would look for is really, do they have any signs of candida? So what may predispose somebody to develop candida or candidiasis in their gut? You know, whether it is the gut or the urinary tract, the reproductive tract, all of these systems, they have a mucosal layer, and this mucosal layer is prone to infections, especially when the pH of this mucosal layer is not at the right pH level. We might understand that, you know, those who have repeated urinary tract infections, often even if they have taken antibiotics, they are reinfected. And even after antibiotics, there still could be evidence of E. coli, which kind of stays within their bladder for extended periods of time. And so these bacteria, they have a tendency to adhere to the walls of the bladder. I'm just giving that as an example so you can understand what I mean by candida, how that can become a persistent problem in the gut or the genitourinary tract. And if that's not addressed, that could be the cause for someone's persistent digestive issues or persistent symptoms related to the skin or other systems. Obviously, if someone has true candidiasis, you know, especially you can go to the pharmacy and get these test strips, and it is a test that can be done at home. Particularly women would know this because they might have done this yeast test, which is just a strip that can be used to used as a swab and then to look at whether there is presence or absence of yeast like infection. But many times it may not even be detectable that way, especially if it is in the gut. So the first thing is really, even before we look at any specific tests that would demonstrate that someone has candidiasis or not, candida refers to a particular kind of species called Candida albicans. But there are many other yeast-related infestations or infections that could take place in the gut. And how do you know if you are prone to candidiasis or not is really by asking yourself certain questions. For instance, if you have taken tetracyclines, or any other antibiotics, for say conditions like acne for a month or longer, then that might trigger the persistence, or that might actually encourage a fungal like growth or fungal like overactivity in the gut. So, or if you have at any time in your life you have taken broad spectrum antibiotics, say for respiratory infections or urinary tract infections, it can be for any other infections for let's say 2 months or longer, or in very short courses, 4 or more times within 1 year period, that also would affect your gut health, your mucosal health, predisposing you to candidiasis. Or if you have taken any broad spectrum antibiotic drug, even if it's one single course, if that has not been addressed properly by giving you the right kind of probiotics to correct your gut microbial health, that also might predispose one to develop candidiasis. Or at any time in your life, if you have been bothered by persistent prostatitis, this is in men, or vaginitis in women, or other problems affecting your reproductive organs, that also predisposes the person to develop candidiasis. And obviously, certain conditions in our life, such as taking birth control pills for over 6 months to 2 years, or if one has been pregnant once or even twice or more, these also would disturb the gut health. And if it is not addressed by taking the right kind of probiotics, that also would result in a tendency for candidiasis. So these are the kind of questions you would ask yourself. Am I prone to candidiasis? By looking at your health history and by looking at your medication history. And steroids like Decadron or other cortisone type drugs, prednisone, these also can increase the vulnerability of the gut and the reproductive system or mucosa to develop candidiasis. Exposure to certain perfumes, insecticides, fabric shop odors, and some other chemicals, if they provoke these symptoms of itching and sneezing, and if you're very sensitive to these kinds of things, that are also kind of possibly indirectly indicates that there is a tendency for candidiasis, or there already is candidiasis.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And, if symptoms of, let's say, itching and bloating And candida-like symptoms, if they really get worse during like muggy seasons, or if it gets worse due to moisture, and also if it gets worse in moldy places, then that also indicates that it's adding on to the already underlying yeast infestation or excessive fungal activity. So these external factors such as moisture or mugginess and humidity and mold is going to worsen it. And any kind of groin itch, or what we call jock itch, these are all indication of fungal infection. And, you know, a fungal toe, a toe where the toenail is discolored, athlete's foot, they also indicate candidiasis or possible candida-like environment. Of course, you know, if you are somebody who eats a lot of sugars, you eat a lot of bread, or you crave for a lot of alcoholic beverages, or even if you're craving for breads and craving for sugars, you may want to seek your practitioner to see if you have a tendency for candida. And interestingly, you know, if one has a very severe reaction, or like kind of if tobacco smoke, it bothers someone so intensely, usually there also is an underlying candida or yeast infestation. So by asking these questions to yourself or talking to your healthcare professional, you can find out for yourself whether you have a tendency for candida or not. What are the symptoms, you know, when you have this kind of candida or candidiasis? They can be fatigue or lethargy. You know, it can be quite severe. And a feeling of being drained. You know, like all the time you do little activities and then you feel drained. And poor memory. In fact, candida can also result in depression, or a sense of sadness which is persistent. Or if one feels like spacey or spaced out, and inability to make decisions, there can be numbness, burning or tingling. There can be muscle aches or weakness. There can be pain or swelling in the joints, some abdominal pain, sometimes constipation, sometimes even diarrhea, bloating, belching, or intestinal gas, troublesome vaginal burning or itching or drainage, or persistent vaginal burning or itching. And, you know, in some men, it's prostatitis that can also indicate possibly underlying candida, or even impotence also. Loss of sexual desire, like that's libido, loss of libido. And, you know, in endometriosis or infertility, candida can be an underlying cause. Or cramps and other menstrual irregularities may have an underlying cause of candida. So excessive premenstrual tension, there might be candida as the underlying cause. And attacks of anxiety and cold hands or feet or chilliness, shaking or irritable, especially when you're hungry. These are all kind of expressions that could be associated with underlying candida. So it would be quite helpful to address candida if you're experiencing any of these symptoms or some of these symptoms. Talk to your healthcare professional who knows about dealing with candida, then you might be able to address candida, and many of these symptoms might actually get better because you have addressed the root cause. And, you know, further looking at the effects or the expressions or the manifestation or symptoms of candida or drowsiness, irritability or jitteriness, and you know, lack of coordination, inability to concentrate, frequent mood swings, headaches, dizziness or loss of balance, pressure above the ears, feeling of the head swelling. These also can be indications of candida. Tendency to bruise easily, like chronic rashes or itching, and numbness, tingling, indigestion or heartburn, food sensitivity or intolerances, then mucus and stools, rectal itching, dry mouth, dry throat, or rash or blisters in the mouth. Bad breath can be an indication of candida. And, you know, foot odor or body odor or hair odor, which is not relieved by washing, can also indicate underlying candida. You know, nasal congestion or post-nasal drip, nasal itching, sore throat, laryngitis or loss of voice, cough or recurrent bronchitis, pain or tightness in the chest, or wheezing or shortness of breath, urgency or urinary frequency, then burning on urination. These all can indicate a possibly underlying candida situation. Urgency to urinate and frequent urination, if that's been going on for several weeks or months, alongside looking at urinary tract infection, it would be helpful to see if actually candida is an underlying cause, which could be resulting in this persistent or relapse of these urinary tract infections. Sometimes, you know, these spots in front of the eyes, or having an erratic vision, or burning or tearing of eyes, recurrent infection of fluids in the ears, ear pain or deafness, all of these can perhaps indicate a yeast-related problem. Of course, you know, a yeast-related problem is not something that is seen as a broad condition within conventional medicine. But from a functional medicine, and also if you're looking at Ayurveda, which really looks at these symptoms as related to your gut health, it is worthy of considering candida. Let me talk to you about how you can find out from a more functional medicine perspective if you have candida or not. And then if that is established, then it would be very important to follow an anti-candida regime, particularly an anti-candida diet, which I will be talking to you in a while, how by changing your diet, you can address the underlying candida. There are many ways to test if you have a candida infection. As I said, you know, if there is a true candida in a woman, then that, you know, you can go to a pharmacy, get this yeast testing strips, and that will be it. But if you want to understand if actually there is more systemic candida where your gut is affected, then you might have to do a comprehensive stool analysis. But what I have found in my practice, which is simple and really, really useful, is to do a urine test. And in fact, when we perform an organic acid test, which is, you know, everything that we put into our body, food, it gets metabolized. And then our kidney, it throws out these metabolites. And when we really look at the levels of these metabolites, we can infer what's happening in the gut. And that way, by doing a urine test, we can look at whether there is candida. In fact, you know, we can look at yeast and fungal markers. There are many different. There's citromalic acid, there is 5-hydroxymethyl-2-furoic acid, then 3 oxoglutaric acid, then furan-2,5-dicarboxylic acid, then there is furan-carbonyl glycine, and there is tartaric acid, arabinose acid, carboxycitric acid, or tricarbolic acid. So these are generally the yeast and fungal markers that we can find through an organic acid test in the urine. And of these, if arabinose acid, you know, it should be less than or equal to 29 millimoles per mole. But if it is greater than that, let's say if it is 47 or 50, then it indicates mild candida. But if it is like 167, which is really out of range, clearly indicates candida. Also, you know, there are other yeast markers. For instance, you know, if 5-hydroxymethyl-2-furoic acid or furan-2,5-dicarboxylic acid or furan-carbonyl glycine or tartaric acid, if they are elevated, then it indicates mold. Sometimes I've found in my patients, you know, who have had long-standing gut health issues, skin issues, they might have both mold infestation and also candida infestation. But once we know what is wrong, we can address it. Often what happens is when there is a yeast infestation, it can also affect the bacterial activity in the gut. Many times I've noticed that those who have candida may also have bacterial overactivity in the gut. And, you know, through this organic acid test, we can look at bacterial markers like hippuric acid or 2-hydroxyphenylacetic acid or 4-hydroxybenzoic acid or 4-hydroxyhippuric acid or DHPPA, which although is a beneficial bacteria, when it is elevated, it indicates some bacterial overactivity. Some of you may have heard of the small intestinal bacterial overactivity called SIBO. And often, you know, SIBO can be linked with yeast overactivity. But what's interesting is when you are treated with an antifungal, so if the yeast is addressed and if we don't really deal with bacteria, there can be an increase in bacterial overactivity. Hence why, you know, it's so important not just to treat the fungus, but also to keep in mind bacteria. Well, you know, if you have access to a functional medicine doctor like myself or someone in your locality, they can give you more information about how to find out if you have candida or not through doing some of these tests, or also by doing a proper candida screening, which doesn't need any test. With good clinical history taking, one can possibly not diagnose, but kind of see if an anti-candida approach would be quite helpful. I particularly also think that, you know, when children have attention deficiency, hyperactivity disorder, or when there are behavioral issues which is affecting their day-to-day life, their learning, or if they are on, you know, any kind of spectrum of autism, it would be so helpful to address candida, because candida can be a contributing factor to digestive issues, behavioral issues in children, in adults, also in the elderly population. So by paying attention to gut health, which is the key thing that Ayurveda stresses upon, is that diseases, they start in your gut, because gut is the first line of defense. And if we don't address gut health, just manage symptoms, then that it will not result in a more permanent reversal of some of these conditions. So what do you do when you do know that maybe you have a tendency for candida, or you have candida, or there is some form of yeast infestation? Then apparently, you know, you would need to seek a healthcare professional and see that if it needs treatment, either with conventional antifungals or with natural antifungal substances. You know, for instance, oregano and olive leaf extract, neem, they all have anti-candida properties. But when they're used properly, they can help. But along with that, it is very important to make changes to your diet. When it comes to making changes to your diet, what is important is to identify those foods which are going to contribute towards candida. And apparently, the most important food that's going to increase your yeast or candida, like infestation, or like candida-like environment in the gut, are sugars. So obviously giving up sugars. And sugars also would include natural sugars. For instance, if you are somebody who really likes drinking a lot of fruit juices, even though fruits, even if they are natural, if they're natural fruit juices without additives or sugars, they still are high in fructose. And especially when you have candida, that can contribute towards further worsening the growth of yeast. Therefore, giving up sugars becomes important. Then natural sweetness as well. For instance, you know, if you have candida, then using natural sweeteners, let's say like coconut palm nectar, or coconut palm sugar, or cane sugar, or what in South Asia is commonly used as jaggery. In Sri Lanka, they use what's called kittul jaggery. So all these kinds of natural sugars, they also at the end of the day, they are sugar, so they are going to contribute to candida. So it's important to really cut them down if there is a serious candida infestation.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Even artificial sweeteners, for that matter, they actually also aggravate candida. You know, like xylitol or aspartame or stevia. So really, the most difficult part of doing an anti-candida diet or approach is really, if you like sugars, to give up sugars, because many foods that we eat on an everyday basis, they contain sugars. You know, particularly avoid artificial sweeteners like aspartame, Splenda, and, you know, stevia, although it's a natural sugar substitute, even that can contribute to it. All of the sugar alcohols like mannitol, you have got erythritol. So there are so many different sugar alcohols which are there today in the market because they are all are like kind of low caloric, and you know, like these diet drinks, they all will have some form of sugar. So it's so important to give up these in order to help your gut rid of this yeast infestation. And there are foods which from different groups which can contribute towards candida. For instance, daily meat, like lunch meat and processed meats, all cheeses except for certain fresh cheeses can actually contribute towards excess fungus. So for about a month or two, it would be really beneficial if you can give up these fungus forming or fungus supporting kinds of foods. And, you know, particularly I've noticed in my practice that when you change your diet very drastically, let's say from being a meat eater to becoming more vegan, you know, if you are plant-based, whole food vegan, it helps in correcting the gut health. But let's say if you are just cutting out meat and animal proteins and you are having anything which is sold as vegan, which may have a lot of sugars, then that would also contribute to its candida. So it's very important when you make serious dietary changes to educate yourself on healthy vegan choices versus unhealthy vegan choices, particularly for your body type or your condition. Something else that in my practice I would discourage my patient from having when they have severe candida is really tofu. Tofu or tempeh. You know, these are fermented soy products, and because they are fermented, they actually can contribute towards increasing candida. And when it comes to dairy, you know, it would be really helpful to eliminate cow's milk, also to eliminate goat's milk and all flavored or sweetened yogurts. Because when you go to the supermarket, there are so many different types of yogurts and they are often sweetened. And they, when you consume, can contribute to its candida. So it's very important that if you are going on an anti-candida diet, then you don't have cow's milk, goat's milk, or sweetened or even unsweetened or flavored yogurts. In fact, even plain yogurt or plain yogurt with live cultures, they also can have candida enhancing properties. So therefore, it's good to avoid for about a month or two. Once you are rid of possibly this yeast overgrowth, then you can reintroduce these foods slowly. It's not that it's a lifelong list of you can't have these foods. You of course can have, but once you have corrected your candida, you can have milk alternatives. For instance, dairy alternatives such as almond milk is excellent. You can have cashew milk, or you can have coconut milk or flaxseed milk, hazelnut milk, hemp milk, or what is interesting is you even can have soy milk. You know, although I'm saying that don't have tofu or tempeh because they are fermented, that's because of fermentation. But if you are using soy milk, that's okay in candida because it is not fermented and it does not have the same properties as dairy milk. So you have lots of options even when you are doing an anti-candida diet. But let's go back to, you know, what about proteins? Because I said, yeah, you can't have tofu or tempeh for about a month or two, then what can I have? And also I said, no, you can't have certain cheeses, particularly the hard cheeses. What can I have? Well, you can have unaged fresh cheeses. You can in fact have cottage cheese. You know, I really like cottage cheese. But again, you know, be sure that it's just plain cottage cheese, because when you go to the supermarket, you often find this cottage cheese with pineapple. You know, cottage cheese with pineapple is quite tasty, but if you're doing cottage cheese with pineapple, then the cottage cheese is good, the pineapple is going to contribute towards candida. So you just want to use plain cottage cheese. In fact, you can have goat's cheese. You know, it is soft, it's moist, it's fresh. You can have mozzarella cheese. You can have ricotta cheese. So there are options. It's not like completely avoid all kinds of cheeses. It's knowing which cheeses are less candida forming and which cheeses actually are bad for candida. And you know, if you are somebody who is not on a plant-based diet, then you can have eggs, you can have certain fish, you know, like anchovies, cod, and herring, halibut, salmon, and sardines, trout. They're all quite good in candida. And of course, if you are a meat eater, then beef, lamb, pork, venison, they're also quite good or okay for candida. Then poultry like chicken, duck, turkey, they're also quite okay if you are going to follow an anti-candida diet. But you know, often if you're somebody who is into fitness and you are using protein powders, you have to be very careful about the kinds of protein powders that you're going to choose when you're doing an anti-candida diet. Like, check the label for, what kind of protein source. For instance, you know, if it is hemp protein or pea protein, they're okay for candida. Okay, what about nuts and seeds? What kind of nuts and seeds can you have? In fact, many of the nuts and seeds actually are very good. You can use them if you are doing an anti-candida diet. For instance, you can have almonds, Brazil nuts, chia seeds, you can have coconut, you can have flaxseed, hazelnuts, hemp seed, you can have macadamia, and also you can have nut butter and seed butter, like almond butter, cashew butter, macadamia butter, pecan butter, sunflower butter. Tahini is excellent. You can have walnut butter. You can have pecans, pine nuts, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, walnuts. Now, there are lots of these kinds of seeds and nuts that you can have during candida. However, what I would say, if you're following a very strict anti-candida diet, it is probably good to avoid these three nuts: cashews, peanuts, and pistachios. Particularly peanuts. You know, peanuts can be can affect your candida quite significantly. So it is good not to have peanuts when you are following an anti-candida diet. What about the fats that you can use or oils? You know, you can have avocado, you can have coconut butter, as I said, you can have coconut milk, which is also good. You can have, in fact, clarified butter or ghee, which is quite helpful in candida. You can use cooking oils such as avocado oil, coconut oil. You can use ghee, you can use olive oil. You can, in fact, use sesame oil. You can use, you know, these oils to as dressing for your salads. And you can have even olives, they're good. You can have pesto, which is made of olive oil. So they are very good sources of fats that you can use during candida. What you do want to eliminate are commercially prepared salad dressings, you know, like such as like there are commercially prepared sauces and spreads. And of course, I don't think any of you would really have margarine because of its trans fats. And, you know, commercially available mayonnaise would actually contribute towards candida. And, you know, there are certain oils which are highly processed, like corn oil is highly processed, grape seed, peanut oil is highly processed, and canola and soybean oils, they are all highly processed. You don't want to have this commercially available, highly processed oils and, you know, these shortenings. These are the fats and oils that you want to avoid. But as long as you stick to the ones that I said you can have, they are very good for supporting your anti-candida diet. But what, say, if you are vegetarian, or even if you're not vegetarian, of course, you should be also having plant proteins. What plant proteins can one have? Again, you know, when it comes to plant proteins, I would say the one that I've found which is very useful is green mung beans. Green mung beans are really good. You know, you have to soak them, you have to rinse them, you have to cook them with lots of water. Use certain spices, and spices and herbs also help in acting as antifungals. For instance, you know, you can use spices and herbs like ginger, nutmeg, oregano, parsley, paprika. You can use rosemary, sage, rock salt, thyme, turmeric. You can use a whole vanilla bean, a garlic powder, fenugreek, dill, curry powder. But don't buy curry powder that's commercially available. If possible, try and find a good recipe for curry powder and make it at home, because it might have lots of additives. And these additives can also disturb your gut health. You know, you can have bay leaf, black pepper, cayenne pepper, chili powder, cilantro, cinnamon, cloves. Even, you know, 100% raw cacao powder can be quite useful. Coriander seeds, cumin. So there are plenty of options in terms of spices and herbs. In fact, all of these spices and herbs can be really helpful when you cook your proteins, when you cook your food, to use them to cook with and also as garnishing. What you don't want to have in terms of legumes are really black soybean or dried lentils, dried beans, and edamame. They are highly fungal forming. So for about a month or two, you want to eliminate them. And also, it's really good during anti-candida phase to eliminate peanuts and peas. And often, you know, the peas that we buy are frozen peas, or even if they are fresh peas, for about a month or two, it is good to really avoid peas when you are doing an anti-candida diet. So what about then vegetables? You know, what kinds of vegetables should you avoid? Okay, let me talk to you about vegetables that you truly want to avoid when you're doing an anti-candida diet, or beets. You know, like beetroots is a fantastic vegetable because of its nitrites, and it really gives good energy. It can even be very good in muscle recovery if you are sporty. But if you have candida, then it is better to avoid beets for a month or two. But you can have the beet tops, the green bits, for your smoothies. And also good to avoid carrots, because carrots are also very high in sugar. For about a month or two, avoid carrots. And pumpkin, again, is going to be candida forming, so you don't want to have pumpkin in during your anti-candida diet. But then what else can you have? You can have lots of other vegetables. Like you can have asparagus, artichokes, bean sprouts, bok choy, you know, broccoli. You can have cabbage, cauliflower. You can have Swiss chard. You can have cucumbers, eggplant, and you can have fennel, garlic, like greens, like beet greens, collard greens, dandelion, kale. You can have mustard greens. Yeah, these are all really good during anti-candida diet. You can have green beans, horseradish, and make sure that when you are buying a horseradish, that it has no additives added to them, because it's these additives which can actually contribute towards yeast infestation. You can have leeks, lettuce, you can have radishes, you can have okra, which is an Indian vegetable. It's very mucilaginous. It's also called lady's finger, and okra can be very good. You can also have onions, parsley, you can have peppers, you can have sea vegetables, you know, like seaweed. You can have spinach, you can have tomato, you can have watercress. So there are a lot of options when you are doing an anti-candida diet from vegetables. What about grains? Yeah, this is a topic that I was waiting not to talk about initially, because during candida, or if you are doing an anti-candida diet, grains can be problematic. And of course, you know, most people are used to having some form of grains in their diet, and this is a slightly difficult topic, because all grains, like whether they are gluten-free or even if they have gluten, like, you know, wheat, spelt, rye, barley, which are gluten-containing, or gluten-free grains like quinoa, brown rice, white rice, rolled oats, millet, buckwheat, and amaranth. And of course, when we look at, you know, these products from these grains like bread, cereal, granola, they all can contribute towards forming yeast. So it's very important that if you are strictly following an anti-candida diet, that you decide to come off grains for a month or two. Of course, you know, you have many other options of good proteins, plant-based, animal-based, and also fats that you could be using in order to nourish yourself. But you need to be ready to come off some of the grains. And, you know, like particularly if you are a fan of pasta or tortillas, then they can actually contribute towards fungus formation. You definitely would have to eliminate corn products like corn chips, and also you would have to eliminate polenta, tortillas, or any refined grain products like white bread or these sweetened cereals that you find in the supermarket in the breakfast aisle, and any of the multigrain cereals or sweetened baked goods. They all have yeast in them, so you would want to get rid of those for a month or two. Of course, you know, you should really be drinking a lot of water, or even, you know, certain beverages like broth, like organic bone broth or organic vegetable broth. You can have filtered water. You can have, you know, herbal teas. You can have vegetable juices, like fresh, raw, cold-pressed vegetable juices. And these will greatly help in correcting your gut and reducing the tendency for candida. So, in fact, once you know that candida might be the underlying cause for your long-standing gut health or repeated urinary tract infections or skin conditions, go on an anti-candida diet with the help of a health professional, as it's not easy to follow, then it might completely turn around your life and you might be in for a really healthy life where you feel energized, your digestion is all right, and you may not have to experience the long-standing candida-related issues. I hope this has been helpful to you to think about your gut health, and do stay tuned to Are You Well? And I'll connect with you next week. Thank you. Survey Bhavantu Sukhinah.